The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham. You're listening to Buzzkirk and Graham Show, and this is Robert Graham, but Chris is still sick. I'll tell you what, it's one of those things that I think many people have had, that kind of chest sinusy cold that comes around, and it makes you cough, 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 cough. Well, when you cough that hard and that frequently, you lose your voice. And I got to tell you what, Chris has a magnificent mind, and when his mouth and his voice are working together, we have great output. And right now, his mouth cannot participate because his voice is gone, gone, gone. So, Chris, if you're tuning in right now, we hope you're feeling better. It is it's great having interaction, exchange. When you have somebody else in the show, it's fantastic because as a co-host, we lean on each other, but we also have very different perspectives and we have different backgrounds. And so we approach each of the different topics that are out there very differently. In some cases, we agree on 99% of the stuff that we discuss, but for the most part, we approach it differently. And so what's nice about that is when we have an exchange and you're listening in to the exchange, it's helpful, hopefully, to help shape perspective, add to perspective, move things along and what have you. You know, right now, when you start thinking about headline news across this country, the big thing that everybody's talking about is the Inspector General's report. And we'll go into that in detail today. There is so much. I don't know if you heard, listened, have the opportunity to tune into, read articles, blogs, you name it, on the daily briefing with Sarah Sanders today with the White House. First and foremost, one of the things I picked up is she's not going anywhere. There was some chatter that was out there on social media that she was resigning her post and moving along as the White House press secretary. I can tell you honestly, when I saw that, it took my breath away because I think she is doing a remarkable job. Her preparation, just imagine being a press secretary. Not only do you have to be up to date on everything that's happening, but you have to anticipate what the media is going to ask you. And if you can't tell, you should know that she prepares her responses. And so if they ask the same question, one reporter after the next, she responds in the exact same way. Sometimes she'll change, especially like today, there was some wild and crazy heated exchange. We're talking about immigration again today. I'll tell you, you try to escape this, but it's getting to this point where we're really leaning into this family separation policy and immigration custom enforcement. But it's not as much immigration custom enforcement, any specific policy by a presidential administration. It is a policy that happens when people are being tried for crimes, okay? So we'll talk through that just so you can hear it and feel it. Now, remember, I'm a dad. I might not have the heart-filled sympathy and the nurturing response that a lot of mothers might have out there, but I can tell you that I care deeply about my kids, and the last thing I would ever want to be is separated from my kids. So you weigh options, and so we'll talk about those options as we go. Now, look, any consequence, this is one of my favorite things that we say in our house, every action has a consequence. It's a negative consequence or a positive consequence. So as we weigh different things, as we go through life and we're faced with making decisions, whether we are going to take a new job, maybe it's something as far, maybe you're thinking about getting married and proposing to somebody. Maybe you're thinking about breaking the law, for heaven's sakes. You've got to weigh what the consequences are going to be. And there's good ones and there's bad ones. Not in every single case, but in most cases there are. And so you have to take a very mature, thoughtful approach, especially when minor children are involved in it. So when we go through that and hash through it, you may say I'm heartless. You may think that I'm not really touching on the issues at hand. But the reality is we have to deal with the challenges that are facing our nation. There's lots of them. When you start thinking about trade, when you start thinking about commerce, when you start thinking about immigration, when you start thinking about the economic impact and overload that people have on the systems when they're not contributing or able to contribute to the system, what do you do as a nation? We have 330 million people that live here in this country that every single lawmaker, especially the commander in chief, has a stewardship and accountability to those people before anyone else on the planet. You can have that sympathetic heart. You can do whatever you want. But the reality is the disciplined, mature approach has to be what? To your people first. Now, it doesn't mean we can't have sympathy. It doesn't mean we can't be sensitive to issues. But the reality is we need to really dial in as much as we possibly can. So we get in there. We're going to talk about this family separation policy. We're going to talk about border security again. We're going to talk about this. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are when we get to that. So later today, I want to encourage you to call in. Just for those that are listening, 602-508-0960. And your input is incredibly valuable because, again, your peers are listening. They want to hear what you're thinking and such. Hey, we're going to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize today. It happened. No big surprise. Two Norwegian lawmakers nominated Donald J. Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize and his work that he's doing with North Korea. So I want to go into what that really means. What is the process? How does it happen? Since it's in after January, this is going to be considered for 2019's nomination. This year, there was over 330 or something people that were nominated. And then when President Obama, and I'm going to talk you through President Obama's nomination, because I think most of you probably slid backwards in your chair and did a supreme head slap when you heard, number one, that he was nominated, and then number two, that he received the Nobel Peace Prize. For what? Okay, so the for what? When I did the research on it again, it just reminded me of what they claimed he did and then how little he actually did. So it's astonishing. It's a political process as well. It is a timely process. It's a trending process. There's a lot of things that go into consideration when these folks vote on it. But interesting tidbit, though, when you start thinking about the people that this committee that comes together, the ruling party is what they call the, let's see here, the governing party in Norway is called the Progress Party, Norway's governing Progress Party. And the Progress Party is the one that nominated him. So we'll see what happens. Two members from their Senate there or from their legislature body. I don't know if they have a parliament or what if they're bicameral type of a setup. But anyways, it'll be really interesting to see how this kind of works and plays out. It's got to drive people completely mad. I tell you what, if I'm thinking in terms of Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, all of these people, Clapper, I don't know if you heard his comments. Clapper can't stand the president. He predicts nuclear war, says everything he's doing is volatile, inconsistent, rude, terrible. He just thinks Donald Trump is more than negative and more than an antichrist. He's like the downfall of a country. And I listened to a report from him this morning, and he said, wow, he did a pretty good job with Kim Jong-un. He talked about the term sheet. He said, we'll wait and see what happens on the outset. He basically said, I still don't like the guy, but what he's doing right now is astonishing. No other presidents have been able to get there and do this. And I'm going to talk about his technique a little bit because there are articles that are starting to move around now that you start to see about. And this is the left and the right writing about him. And you're starting to see these articles that are starting to manifest themselves. And the articles are talking about his approach and how his approach is polar different than any of our diplomatic attempts to unarm, denuclearize, approach this type of totalitarian dictator such as Kim Jong-un. And I got to tell you, when you hear it, you're probably going to say, I get it. I see what he's doing, and he's being very successful in doing it. Again, there's so much happening, not just on a national, international standpoint, but here in Arizona, too. There has been an incredible story that has manifested itself, and I'm not saying incredibly good. It's a story that has got a lot of people scratching their head. A lot of people don't want to rush to judgment, but they're terrified in what's happening. So the Mesa PD, I hate to bring them up specifically, but the Mesa PD, if you've been seeing the videos that are coming up now, these are shoulder cams, these are surveillance videos in different establishments and such, even a hospital. And you're seeing Mesa Police Department's, some of their officers. Now remember, this is a handful of officers. We've got this agency there that is fantastic in so many ways, right? We know a lot of those police officers. I have friends that are in that department. And when you see these videos of some of these people that seem like they're somewhat helpless or maybe not complying perfectly, and they just get pummeled. Now, I've been hit in the face. I've been hit in the face probably more than most people have been hit in the face. It doesn't feel good. Okay. And then when you see this, and then the question is this unnecessary force? Is it necessary force? We don't know the state of the mind of the individual because we can't. A lot of these videos don't have sound. So you don't see the sound. You just see the physical activity that's happening. And any person that has any compassion is going to go, oh my gosh, it makes you feel pretty uncomfortable when you're watching this. But what's happening? Okay, is there? We've got to get to the bottom of this. Hopefully, a little bit later, we'll be able to bring somebody on that's going to talk through by having the experience of being a police officer and having to deal with non-compliant people. And how do you restrain them? How do you deal with this? And again, in some states, some cases, when you look at these videos, and I'll post a couple of them online on Facebook, you look at them and you determine, or what you think. I mean, it's, what do we do every day anyways? We're taught not to judge people, but when we look at videos, especially things like this, you make a judgment. You look at it and go, oh, geez, you know, that doesn't look very good with the Mesa Police or what have you. So we'll get into that and try to understand what's going on there. Now, what's stirring around education again? What's happening in the state of Arizona? We're going to touch on things that matter the most for you. Again, I talk about it all the time. Job opportunity, prosperity, and safety. That's the mission. That's the outcome. We have all these integrated things. Believe it or not, the FBI, the tariffs, what's happening in the administration with immigration enforcement and such, the National Guard on our border. Trade with Mexico, the peso. Oh my gosh, there's so much happening. How does it impact you? Do you want to have the best possible outcome? Well, listen in. We'll talk about different ways to do it and to accomplish it and how to approach your little sector in this world. Again, this is Robert Graham. You're listening to Buskirk and Graham Show on 960 The Patriot. We'll be right back after the break. Oh, man, you're back for more. The Robert Graham. This is Robert Graham and the Buskirk and Graham Show. I think, Bill, you actually confused me a little bit with that music. I was trying to listen to the words and attempting to enjoy the music, but it didn't work out very well. So if anything, we could get back to rock and roll. Actually, remember we talked a little bit about some jazz, and there's this great saxophone player named Bob Snyder, Robert Snyder. It's really interesting. I have a good friend of mine that lives in North Phoenix, North Scottsdale area, and we were talking about music, and when I was a kid, and even now, I still play the saxophone. I play the alto saxophone. I love jazz. I think it's fantastic. And there was a place in Michigan where all the straits, what they call it, the Straits of Michigan, where all the Great Lakes come together. And there's a little island right in the center called Mackinac Island. And Mackinac Island it's historic. The Native Americans in the area up there, they call it the Sleeping Turtle. I think it's the Ojibwe and the Chippewa Indians and such they call it. And if you look at it from the side, it's kind of like looking at Camelback where you can see the outline of a camel. If you look at this island, you can envision the Sleeping Turtle there. But it was a very interesting historical place during the Revolutionary War because of its strategic stronghold with all of the Great Lakes there. And so there, it's horse and buggy only. It is you got horse and buggy and bikes, I should say, and walking. You know, if you want to get in shape, you can go eat a pound of fudge and then walk 10 miles around this island. It is, it's gorgeous. It's Michigan, for heaven's sakes. It's northern Michigan. It's gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. But I bring it up because the Grand Hotel is a ginormous summer resort for families that's on Mackinac Island. If any of you have ever seen there's a great old movie called Somewhere in Time. It's a mind-blowing old movie, and it's just fantastic. And that took place there. As a little kid, I grew up on Mackinac Island in the summers, and I would go over to the Grand Hotel. We knew the folks over there and spend time. Well, one of the benefits that I had was my uncle was great friends with the owner of the Grand Hotel. His name was Dan Musser, and now there's Dan Musser Jr. running the Grand Hotel. But talked about playing a saxophone. Bob Snyder, we heard him playing, just ripping it up with his band. It's kind of a big band feel to it. You know, every single night they had dancing and such, and we'd go over there as a family. So here I'm, a little kid, dressed up. I think I was in middle school, dressed up in my suit, and we over there were dancing and just enjoyed the heck out of the music. And then I was introduced to Bob Snyder and came up there. I played the saxophone, and he said, "Hey, why don't you come by and give it a shot tomorrow?" So I came by and I started getting private lessons from this man. Free private lessons from this man. I mean, actually, it was pretty fantastic. So any time that we can play a little bit of Bob Snyder, Robert Snyder, let's do it because he is astonishing. Anyways, I wish I could say that I was, but I was a decent sax player, but not like this guy. Superhuman, fantastic music. Anyway, so going into all the different things that are impacting us on a national, international standpoint, worldwide, we look at it and we say, hey, is it really important? Do we really need to consider every single aspect that's going on? And then Trump, right? President Trump gets hammered every time he turns around. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this immigration dynamic that's happening in the country because it is... becoming incredible as far as the protests, the outcry. Today, if you listen to Sarah Sanders daily briefing, there was a reporter. His name is Brian Kern, I believe, and he's from Playboy. And he went berserk, okay? Not berserk in the sense that he was totally out of line, but he was mostly out of line. He kept screaming. They kept asking about the child separation. Now, this is something a lot of people are asking about. What is this policy? I have a good friend of mine that I sat down with for lunch the other day or for breakfast, and she said, he needs to fix this policy. I don't know if I can ever vote for him again if he doesn't fix this policy. And I'm thinking to myself, first and foremost, the policy didn't just happen. It started back in like 2002. Okay, the reason why it's becoming very relevant right now is because, number one, it's Donald J. Trump is the president of the United States, so people are looking at it. People forget that President Obama, if you take all the presidents before President Obama and add up how many people they deported, Obama deported more people, okay? And so people don't even think about it. You didn't hear anything about it because the left didn't have the same causes before. They changed because they just cannot stand Donald J. Trump. So they come in and say this. Now, I got to tell you, being a parent, thinking about separation, they call it the family separation policy or what's happening within immigration. There's no written law specifically, but let me tell you what happens. Let me give you a different way to think about this. So let's just say that somebody you see on TV, you read in the newspaper, violates and breaks the law somewhere, right? So you think about that in that sense and you say, okay, they broke the law. Now the authorities arrest them. Do they go to the person's house and collect the kids and take the kids and the parent to the jail cell? Okay, I might be oversimplifying this, but I want you to think in terms of that context. Okay, because when I read it, I read a number of articles trying to get my head around this. I was looking for some legal precedent. I was looking for some historic background, some immigration policy. I wanted anything to defend this position because I just think I don't know enough about it, right? To defend it or to support, you know, one way or the other. So think about it in a sense. Do they round up a kid or kids and take them to the jail cell with the parents? Now, the next question is, are they separating the family when they arrest the parent, take them to jail? They are, right? So it's like, oh my gosh, you're separating this one individual away from his or her kids. Maybe both parents get arrested and taken away. It happens. Happens every single day, multiple times every day, okay, with all these other crimes. Now, I'm going to shift gears now and talk about immigration. When these people come into the United States, and I'm saying people, these human beings, these families, come into the United States of America illegally, and they're apprehended, they've got minor children. Who do they put on trial? Who do they put before the immigration judges? The parents, right? So wait a minute. So they break the law and they separate the parents from the children. Now, the children go through this refugee kind of restorative process, refugee restoration. I'll find the actual name of the organization and bring it to the next segment. But they do this and they separate them. So now you go, oh, and so this reporter goes after Sarah Sanders, says, don't you have empathy? He's yelling this over other reporters that she's asking to do that. She says, you're a parent of young children. He must have said that 15 times. And the thing that got me was the empathy comment. I thought to myself, yeah, of course she has empathy. Didn't you see her cry weeks ago when you saw a young boy that talked about the gun violence that's happening at the schools? She feels this. This is an intimate thing, but it goes back to this reality of what about the parents? Are they empathetic to the fact that their kids likely will be separated from them if they get apprehended? This is no new news. This is one of those consequences. You remember we talked about at the beginning? Every single action has a consequence, good or bad. And so this is a consideration. This is one of the risk considerations that a family trying to bust into a country illegally has to consider. They cannot carry, they shouldn't accommodate every single person that does this. We want to be empathetical to every single person, but what about the citizens of this country? I mean, come on. This is one of those things. And I'm trying to be as heartfelt as I possibly can because I really can't imagine how terrified these young kids are. But when I see the media, when I see Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and all this waving their fingers and pointing and saying how it's not humane, It's disgusting. Even churches have come after him. And I got to tell you, I get it. Keep the families together, but you have to prosecute those that break the law. And if you don't prosecute those that break the law, why have the laws in the first place? It's not a lawmaker's job to determine which job or law that they're going to follow. We'll be back with more after the break. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham. Hopefully you're having a fantastic day. You're listening to the Buzz Kirk and Graham Show. And we are hoping that we've got our good friend from Grand Canyon Planning on, John Dombrowski. Are you with us? No, we're not with us today. Well, let me give you a little recap as it relates to the overall financial dynamics that are happening, because I want to make sure that we are, you know, keeping you. Some of you have said, hey, we really like this financial update and such as it relates to John and his input and what's happening. Let me give you a feel for it right now. There's a lot of different market dynamics. It sounds like we may actually have John with us now. So we had a little technical difficulty. John, are you with us?
I'm here. Sorry, guys.
Hey, no problem. I was just putting my financial advisor hat on real fast. I was getting ready to go for it because I figured everybody loves – I get great input on everything that you talk about. So, again, the market is moving. It's shaking. It's there's not a lot of wild and crazy. Actually, the volatility index went down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. Yep.
So I'm real curious on your insight again. I mean, here we are planning for the future.
You know, a lot of people think that it would be important to double your money, and you always have to tell people, how can you double your money? Well, just fold it in half.
Yeah. Seriously, that's
where's the rim shot?
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, here's the thing. When it comes to the VIX, the volatility index that you're talking about right now, I'm looking at all these things that are happening out there, Robert. This week alone, my gosh, think about all the things that happened. Mm-hmm. We had the president who met with North Korea. They signed an agreement to denuclearize North Korea. We had a quarter point rise in interest rates. We had a report today that came out about Comey and about some of the things that are happening in politics. We had geopolitics. We've got financial news. We've got 4% growth rate that we're talking about for our economy right now. All of these things, what does it mean? We find little blips in the day, short term, things that happen day to day. And that's where you're looking at this VIX. The VIX is dropping right now. The economy's good. The markets are good. But I don't want to look at things day to day. And I think people have a tendency to do that. We have to look at things for the long term. You know, if we think about 4% growth, that's not something that we measure month to month. We measure that over a period of time. Yeah. And that's the way we want to look at our investments, is over time. So the really critical, I think, news that we receive is growth, corporate earnings, which are being projected outwards now, third quarter, fourth quarter, higher than expected. Mm-hmm. These are all wonderful pieces of information for us to use when we're trying to put together some type of a plan for our money, for our investments, where we should be investing. And we want to look at these things on a long-term basis.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you start thinking about the long-term basis. That's a critical point, because the daily volatility drives people mad. I used to tell people that if you've got everything tuned in, you're iPhone with all your stocks you're watching, and you're getting heartburn every single day, and you've got your news radio, your finance news radio on, and you're just tuning in all the time, then you're likely not invested, or you don't have the right mindset for the long run. You are the here and now, and likely you're going to drive yourself a bit mad. And that's why having this real thoughtful approach to the long term, and we've been talking a lot about debt and income just this last little bit. How about, I mean, when you start talking about what do people mean by diversifying a portfolio for the long run?
Well, if you think about it, if you were to look at your portfolio from its beginning stages, maybe you started investing in your 401k, say 10 years ago, 15 years or 20 years ago. You know, what did you start at? What was the amount that you started with? Of course, you're contributing over time. But if you look at a chart, and most people for their 401ks, they can go on the site for the 401k and they can track what their returns have been over a number of years. That's what money managers do. Any mutual fund company out there, or ETF, or money manager will show you past performance. Of course, we could never rely on past performance for future performance. However, we can look at past performance to see how well our portfolio is done. And based on that is how we could make decisions as well. We can have some type of an idea of what we may expect from an investment. Now, we have to look at our overall, you talked about diversification, we have to look at, well, what is that mutual fund invested in? Is it an equity fund, which is a stock fund, or is it a bond fund, which invests in bonds? We don't want to overweight ourselves in one specific sector or one area of the market. We want to diversify that portfolio to balance out the bumps that will happen in the road, as we know, Robert.
Yeah, it's interesting because it really does balance it out. You know, and if you look at a lot of the, for smart diversification that you just talked about, and I know you do this, Grand Canyon Planning. What's your number, John?
480-991-1055. I hear that music again. Yeah, all right. Securities and advisory services offered through Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA SIPC, and an investment advisor. Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Hey, Robert, thanks so much. We'll pick it up on the other side.
You got it. All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This is Robert Graham, Buzz Kirk and Graham Show. We'll be right back with more. Let's feel how it impacts us everywhere after the break. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham. You're listening to Buzz Kirk and Graham Show. Chris is not with us. He's still fighting that nasty cold. Hopefully he's doing well. He's lost his voice again. I'll tell you what, it is hard to do radio by sign language. You really can't do it. And so hopefully he's feeling better. It is crazy. I mean, every single year, I think I get that cold once a year. And as many of you probably remember, if you get that cough going, it just takes everything out of you, especially your energy and your voice. So, Chris, we hope you're feeling better and such. Hey, so going into the break, we've been talking about a lot of stuff. We were just talking about with John Dombrowski from Grand Canyon Planning, and we're talking about all the different movement that's happening around the world as it relates to finances, right? So you have the Fed behaving a certain way, doing things as far as raising rates and such. You see what's happening here with the volatility index going down. You see consumer confidence way up. You see unemployment. Literally, I believe it's over four decades, it's the lowest unemployment that we've had. The growth rate in the gross domestic product. Let me tell you, what that really means to you is that we're exporting more, we're producing more. We've got our economy's growing at a very, very healthy rate. I remember 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I would listen to financial experts that said that we'd no longer think that the U.S. will go over a 3% growth rate, that it would be almost impossible just because of the way that our infrastructure dissolved and such. To give you an idea what I mean by the infrastructure dissolving. So I think it was last week or so, we did a little talk on the unions and what was happening around the country and such. Think about the sense of a business that's trying to manufacture earnings, okay? And I'm not saying that in a bad way. They're trying to find the best widget to sell to have the best outcome. They want to do it at the maximum profit. They have an ongoing concern in the sense that the business is going, they want to have best outcomes, and they want people to experience the best. Every CEO that I can imagine in the United States of America wants to keep their business here. They don't want to outsource it. They don't want to. But in many cases, what happens is because of the financial dynamics and the cost of doing business in the United States has become so high from a regulatory standpoint, the cost of labor, the cost of benefits and such, even their facilities and such, it makes it very, very difficult. In many cases, labor becomes more than 35-40% of the operational expense of a business. And when you start looking at that, it goes, oh my gosh, it becomes prohibitive. It makes it so that businesses have a difficult time surviving. So what they did in response is they started to push manufacturing under the unskilled type of businesses or business units outside of the country. And when they did that, they start to manufacture outside the country. Now, here's the big challenge that we have. We were talking yesterday about the trillions of dollars that have been repatriated into the United States. Well, that's great. These dollars are coming back in. The problem is that, I mean, we're seeing good return on growth now with some of the great economic policy. It's really funny to me because I see some of the lefties are trying to take credit and saying that all this, you know, juice up in the economy came from Obama policies. I got to tell you, I've never seen such destructive, lawn-tugging policies hurting our economy past FDR, except for good old President Obama. So it is what it is. And I can't believe people won't point to history in the right way. But nonetheless, you have this outsourcing, this out-migration that happens, and they move off land. Now, I don't know if I've said this to everybody that's listening, But if you go to Michigan's a perfect example. So Michigan, what do we have? Huge automotive, right? Automotive got outsourced like mad. I mean, from brakes to the assembly, Mexico, China, other places in Asia and such. I mean, there's just assembly plants everywhere for different products and components of a particular vehicle or car. So now this happens. And in some cases in Michigan, we had billion-dollar facilities that are there where they were producing a ton of cars, whether it was Oldsmobile, GM directly, you name it, Cadillac, such, just production, production, production. So after they don't need these facilities anymore because they reconstitute themselves in another country, what happens with those structures? So GM or whatever the company is, they have to pay taxes on those dwellings, okay, those buildings. So they're paying taxes on the property, they're still in the property, but they're also paying taxes on those buildings. So I actually have a picture my mom sent me from Lansing, Michigan, when they were demolishing a lot of the plants. And the demolition vehicle said, demolition means progress. And in my mind, it was such a negative connotation when I saw this. But when they knock the buildings down, they don't have to pay taxes on that building anymore. And so companies were trying to outsource for financial security, but then they are trying to create efficiencies by taking down the infrastructure. Well, what's the problem with that? Now when you start to see the rest of the country, the world, taking shape, and you're starting to see wages increase in different places, the parity or close to that, you're starting to see wage labor rise in other countries. You're starting to see organizations of unions and such that happens. And as this price point starts to rise up, the benefit of outsourcing it across the world comes back to the U.S. You're seeing now some jeans are starting to get manufactured in the U.S. again. Other things are being manufactured in the U.S. again. And they're doing that for a couple of reasons. The environment's better and it's cost effective again, because remember, CEOs are held up accountable for what? Best possible outcome financially for that company, right? So all the shareholders are rattled in the cage. If you didn't have good positive earnings reports, like we're talking about this gross domestic product, if you don't have good earnings reports, then you're probably going to lose your job because the board's going to fire you, right? So they got to get it done and make it happen and get their earnings. So now if they can bring it home, it's very, very beneficial. But here's the question. We have these trillions of dollars coming back that are being repatriated to the U.S. We've got companies that are attempting to move the manufacturing back here. What is the holdup? Where do they manufacture? They just tore down all the buildings. Over the last 10, 15 years, they've been ripping these buildings down. Some of them were brand new billion-dollar facilities that they just took to the ground. And the reason why I intimately understand this, I was involved in a business that would look for what we call non-use assets, assets that were big buildings like this, manufacturing, paper mills, power plants that were sitting dormant, empty, but had all this equipment in it, had all this metal in there, had all this kind of stuff in there. And then we would go in there and see that if we could recycle it, like sell it off to other manufacturing companies, demolish it, melt down the metal, do whatever we're going to do, the bricks, the wood, what have you. Anything that was in there that could be resold, we looked to do that. And so I was astonished at the millions and millions and millions and millions of square foot available for people to do things like this. And so that's one of the biggest challenges we have. So we're trying to bring this all back to the U.S. When you think buy American, you've got to think in terms of getting the rest of the world to buy American. When I was a kid, we had the big buy USA, buy American. Remember that whole campaign that we had when we were younger? And some of you were probably carrying the torch and carrying the banners and stuff. I was too little. I just went with the flow, right? And now when I look at that, I think, okay, it's great. If we can get Americans to buy American goods and services, that's fantastic. But we need the rest of the world to buy our goods and services. That's how you expand an economy. You get other dollars to come in. This is a very simple consideration, right? So I can tax you and try to grow this way like Obama was trying to do. And it skins your back, takes away any incentive for innovation and creativity. And then once the government spends the money, where does it go? It's gone. It's vaporware. It's non-sustainable. It's a liability, right? But if I can get somebody to buy my American goods and services from one of our small businesses or even one of our larger businesses, the dollars come in. And what happens to dollars? They pay payroll. They pay for consumption. It starts to expand our economy and helps us support other goods and services. So this collective effort from the taxes, the repatriation, now we're going to see infrastructure development in the manufacturing world, it's all working in our benefit. So the 4% growth, I have called here. I bet we're going to get close to 5%, which is remarkable in GDP. Again, this is Robert Graham. You're listening to the Buzzkirk and Graham Show. My friend Chris is not feeling hot today. He'll be with us hopefully soon. But we're going to come back and we're going to dive right back into some of the trade dynamics, but also Korea versus Iran and the president's behavior. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham. You're listening to the Buzzkirk and Graham Show. It is Thursday. We're almost to the end of the week. Hopefully, you're having a fantastic week. If you are joining us via your vehicle, thank you. If you're at work or home, thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate you. I've been getting lots of feedback. What I try to do when we're talking here is I put Facebook on and my Twitter feed, and I try to see if there's interactions that are happening, and I try to post the different articles that we're talking about so that way we can have an interaction right here and live. And yesterday was really active, and I appreciate those people that were tuning in and were going there. I'm going to do a Facebook Live today, and that way you can kind of see the studio and see what's going on in here and see my scary, scary large head, and hopefully it'll entertain you a little bit further. But that being said, we were just talking about the trade dynamics, and what's happening is when you get population migration, when you have outsourcing of jobs, and then when you have people trying to migrate back into this country with their infrastructure, with manufacturing, there's a cost associated with it when you have that kind of movement. Now, that's the cost or the investment that comes back that builds this infrastructure here can be a very good thing for us, okay? Make us more competitive. It brings modern and current technology to the forefront, and it allows us to stay kind of a cutting edge. So there's a real big positive here. And what you're hearing from a lot of these companies that had trillions of dollars sitting on the sidelines overseas, now that they're repatriating, remember, they weren't able to use this money to further their efforts. Now, even technology itself can actually reduce the cost of manufacturing products and services. So what we're hoping is you're going to see a lot of this infrastructure shift, and you're going to see some of the changes happen. Now, here's a little sidebar. So the International Monetary Fund, there's a headline here. IMF puts itself at odds with Trump over U.S. growth. Now, they're freaked out because they didn't really anticipate that we'd have this kind of result that we're having. So they're saying that the $1.5 trillion tax cutting package coupled with a $300 billion spending boost will drive the federal deficit to 4.5% of the gross domestic product, which is double what it was 3 years ago. Okay. Now, here's the thing about these kind of number crunchers, which they always seem to forget. When you have good policy, it increases revenue. When you increase revenue, you have different type of consumption that will actually lead to more revenue for what? The country via taxes. And so they say this, but they never, ever, ever increase the top line. They always increase the number. They say, oh, look at the tax cuts. Look at the spending. But they never talk about the revenues that come from great policies. And that's one of the considerations we really, really, really have to think about. They did say in here the rapidly rising gap in the public finances will provide a near-term boost to the U.S. economy and those of some trading partners. But it entails a host of risks for the world economy. And they start talking about inflation for the rest of the world and such. Well, tell you what. President Trump is very clear about policies that work and encouraging other countries to do what's best for their country. Again, this is Robert Graham. You're listening to 960 The Patriot, the Buzzkirk and Graham Show. Hey, go to Facebook. Robert Graham, politician, like the page. Be a part of the close to 30,000 people that are engaging on a daily basis there, and love to have you on Twitter as well at Robert S. Graham. We'll be back for the second hour. We've got lots to cover, and you'll be amazed at the stuff we have to talk about. Be back after the break.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.